Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
Good morning, rise and shine. You're on with this due time with Pastor Steph. How are you today? That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you last week? We started off Tuesday as we talked about our, let's talk about it Tuesday, Church Folk Day, and we got started with our season 1, episode 8. As we talk about our Danita and
in Alabama, there are more than 1,400 kids just like us with all kinds of childhood cancers and blood disorders, like leukemia, tumors, and sickle cell. Over 90% of us receive treatment and family-centered care at the Alabama Center for Childhood Cancer and Blood Disorders at Children's of Alabama, where some of the brightest minds and most compassionate hearts are committed to finding a cure.
We're committed to a cure.
And you can be too.
Good morning. Welcome back to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. And it is shaking the Monday morning blues. Thank God for a wonderful weekend as we are getting started into a brand new week. God has been so kind, so loving, so giving to spare us just one more safe weekend. And how can we give God thanks? How can we give God thanks for always looking out for us, always watching over us? And, you know, we give God thanks for always just covering us, always covering us in all things. I want you to get those pens and papers out as we are going to get a little information started this morning. Come on. All right. All right. We have our list this morning. Feeling bloated? All right. Well, these are the foods to get rid of bloating. All right. Give you a chance to get those things out. All righty. Okay. Well, they're saying the triggers to bloating is stress. Stress. When you're stressed, they say there's a highway of communication system between your gut and your brain. And when you are stressed, it causes a level of constipation or diarrhea. But either way, it causes bloating. They say the body also may cause the esophagus to spasm and increase the secretion of stomach acid, causing even more bloating. Number two, one of the things that can help you be bloated is you're too sedentary. Okay. What is sedentary? When you don't move around enough. Yes, you're not walking, you're not running, you're not moving. Even consistent walking around the house, it says. Okay? They say when it takes food a long time to move through your stomach, there's an increased possibility for gas formation. But when the stomach is empty, fermentation of food and gas production both decrease. Okay? Number three, you're drinking more alcohol than usual. Okay? They say alcohol is a toxin, and the body recognizes it as such. It's an inflammatory substance that causes swelling and water retention in the body. All right? So now that also causes bloating. So the foods that can help with that bloating, blueberries. Ah, there go the berries again. Always berries. Berries are on every list we have. Okay? So they're a good combination of water and fiber, and we always talk about the fiber, both of which are involved in gut health, okay? So soluble fiber attracts water and helps ease bowel movement by removing the excess water, okay? So in that, we get rid of the bloating, okay? Celery. Wow. They say, according to studies, celery is a whopping 95% water and rich in potassium. Okay? They say it's also a good source of insoluble fiber, which helps to add bulk, to the stool as well as move it through the digestive tract, decreasing both water and gas bloating. Okay? All right, we're trying to get rid of the bloating. Ah, ginger. Okay. They say ginger helps to improve digestion and reduce the formation of gas that causes bloating. And they say ginger also has been shown to accelerate digestion. Okay? So it helps to move the foods through the digestive tract so they aren't as likely to ferment in the intestines and produce gas. We're talking about bloating. They're saying make sure you drink a lot of ginger tea if you are bloated consistently. Okay. Parsley. Wow. They say parsley is a natural diuretic, and it helps to excrete excess water from the body, decreasing water-related bloating. They say it's also considered a carminative herb, which helps to decrease gas formation. Okay? So, let's see what else they're saying here. All right, so they say if you constantly notice that you have symptoms of bloating, they say some people may find that spicy food, okay, will increase their bloating. So consider limiting a lot of spicy food. I know a lot of people like spicy food, and it wouldn't seem like it would be connected, but it is. Okay. They say watch what happens when you eat. Watch what happens when you eat certain things. They say certain foods trigger a lot of bloating, and it would be good if you can identify what it is that's making you bloated. Okay. Here's one that I know I have to do quite often, and it's not quite for bloating, but they say avoid lying down for at least 3 hours after eating. Yes, I know a lot of times if I lay down too soon after eating, oh, my stomach is messed up. So if you're getting a lot of bloating, make sure you don't lie down too soon after you're eating. Okay? Again, move around, move around, move around. They say go for a gentle walk after meals if you're experiencing a lot of bloating, because it can also help, again, move that food around and your digestion will be much better. Okay? They say, again, limit the amount of alcohol as well as carbonated beverages. Okay, and they say also beverages with artificial sweeteners. Okay, a lot of times we'll drink like warm soda or the ginger ale, but they say that still can cause bloating opposed to helping get rid of the bloating. Okay, and they say eat slowly and chew your food thoroughly before swallowing, because that in and of itself creates bloating. Okay? So there's a health tip for our Monday morning. Okay? So what are we talking about today? What news do we have today? Okay, well, you know, we're always talking about the kids. And we always talk about how, you know, there's something that they don't do right. But you know what? I was really, really smiling when I got this news, this article last night. You know, in Rhode Island, they say that there were a group of boys who thought this creep this teacher was a creep, and they used a what they call a pedo database to monitor him as to how he was interacting with the girls in their classroom. So they say a group of Rhode Island middle schoolers, which were all boys, thought that their teacher was a creep. So they would log every time in the class where he was, like, acting weird. So they say that, again, they started this little pedo database, and they said they would watch the little girls in the class, how they would react when the teacher would do little things. And if they say if they call, if he called them like little names, even like sweetheart or sunshine, they would love that. They would love that. And they say that he would ask some of the little girls to like dance for him, and they didn't like that. And it started with one little boy who was watching and noticing when he would speak to the little girls in the classroom that the little girls were uncomfortable. And they said that the teacher would comment consistently. And they say that the teacher even commented. Now, check this out. The teacher himself even commented that he'd received complaints for decades without any action being taken against him. So you bragging around these kids. And again, this one little boy noticed it. And I guess somehow or another he got to talking. And when he noticed that, when other boys also noticed it, then they got together, this little group, and they decided to do this here. So he said that sometimes the little girls would laugh, or he said sometimes they would just kind of sit there awkward. He said even the ones that he said little creepy things too, they laughed, but you could tell it wasn't like a regular laugh. So he said they were like fake laughing and like awkward laughing. He could even tell, you know, they would even notice that this wasn't even like what the little girls would feel comfortable with. Now, I mean, come on now. How often does that happen? Because little boys are just creeps themselves. Half the time, the girls are acting up because the little boys are the little boys are creeps. But that it was a little different here. So again, when other students noticed, they got together, and here's the thing: they told the teachers. They told other teachers. They told other people, but they were ignored. They were ignored. Now, that's discerning. Now, can you imagine them noticing this and being honest enough to say something? What would you say to a group of boys who were coming to you saying, hey, you know, Mr. Jones is saying some things that's not nice, and you know, Mary and Jane and Sue, you know, are not, you know, and here's what they said. They felt that the little girls were feeling humiliated. These are their words. Okay. They say that they told the teachers that he'd play a song and he'd make one of them get up and dance. And they said he would say stuff like, you all love me, so choose love. What kind of mess is this? Then another time, they said that he said to the classroom, or in the classroom, well, everybody should be in their bathing suits tomorrow. And y'all don't say nothing to this teacher? Well, finally, I don't know what made them pay attention, but they finally escorted him out of the school, and they placed him on leave, and they are now investigating these allegations that these little boys had. So finally, they told their parents, and you know, the parents now went to the school, and they're now making complaints for not just the little girls, but also for the little boys, because now they are something ended up tripping them off that they ended up paying attention. So now he's out and he's suspended while they do investigation. But like I said, you know, we're always talking about the little boys and, you know, the things that kids do that are not so nice. And it was kind of refreshing. It was refreshing that, you know, you found some kids who, you know, was really willing to get involved. Get involved. How often does that happen? How often does that happen? All right. What else are we talking about today? Okay. Oh. Well, ladies, and men, but ladies, you know, we're talking about, you know, more and more as the month of October approaches, where it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You know, they're picking up a lot of speed on these cases of domestic violence. Well, out in California, there was a 27-year-old mom who they found dead. But when they found her, they couldn't identify her because she didn't have a head. Oh, didn't have a head. And she was a DoorDash driver, and she had a 7-year-old and 1-year-old girls. And her youngest daughter's father has been arrested for her murder. She's 33 years old. And they're saying that her father had told her, please stop seeing him. Please stop seeing him. Please stop seeing him. As a matter of fact, don't even talk to him. I don't care whether this is your child's father or not. Just please stop talking to him. Leave him alone. And he said that the more he noticed, the more he said it, the more she spoke. And he said that he had been violent with her before. She got a She got a restraining order against him in April, but continued to see him. So what is the point of doing all of that if you're still going to see these creeps? And this is not the first time that any of this has happened, you know, and you know, you don't realize that you're in violation. You are in violation when this order of protection is put in, but you keep seeing this individual. So if they say don't be within 100 feet of him, then you can't be within 100 feet of the person. Because, see, when you go get the order of protection, oh, they already know whether there's children involved. Yes. Because I'm sure, you know, there's this long questionnaire that you have to fill out and a lot of questions you have to answer. And, you know, you just don't get an order of protection just out of nowhere. You have to prove that there are things that are going on with this person that isn't correct. So like the dad said, you know, he had been telling her, you know, leave him alone. And the more he told her to leave him alone, the more she saw him. And that's a lot of people's issue when they have teenagers. You know, and they don't like either the girl that their son is dating or the boy that their daughter's dating. And they say that, you know, they try to step back a little bit because it seems like the more you talk, the more the kids are determined to see one another. And here we are. This is what the case was with this Karina. And they say that they finally caught up with him. They've arrested him. And when they found her, her head had been cut off with a sword. So because of the restraining order that had already been taken out on him, that's the first person that they went to. They say that her grandmother said that he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and he was on medication. And they said he would use that as an excuse for his behavior, but he drank excessively. And we all know that when you're on those kind of meds, that you don't need to be drinking because it definitely exacerbates the effect of the medication. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, you have medication that's going to take care of the issue, but if you're drinking, it's going to have an adverse reaction. So that's what they're investigating now. And they're almost sure that he did it. But I tell you, please, 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 you know, as this is going on, you know, in a lot of lives, millions and millions and millions of people experience domestic violence. Please get out. You know my motto, get out and get out fast. Okay? And, you know, when someone is talking to you about something, pay attention. Pay attention. You know, you can't be in all this la-la land and you are, like, oblivious. And you're rejecting what people are saying. You know, I'm sorry. We've just come too far for this to still be going on. You know, years ago, decades ago, you know, it was nothing for, you know, people to continue to see someone because, you know, they didn't think things were that bad. And, you know, the news, you know, centuries ago, the news wasn't out the way it is now. And we didn't have social media and things like that. But you got to be kidding me that, you know, you are still, you know, we're still in an age like this, you know, where women used to complain that, you know, they didn't have anywhere to go and things like this. We don't have those excuses anymore. Is it easy? No. However, there is more help now than there was years ago, where a lot of women would feel stuck, you know, locked in. Not only that, you know, years ago, women used to feel that way also because they weren't working. You remember grandma, great-grandma, you know, they were housewives. And they didn't drive. You know, the husband did everything. You know, they weren't independent. Now, forget it. You got a friend, a family member, or something, you know, that can help you. You just got to speak up. You know, just speak up and let people know. And I'm not even talking about this God thing. I mean, we know what happens in church. Church has not really been a help for some people. We have those accounts right here, you know, on Across the World Christian Talk Show when we did our domestic violence series. You know, the last time we did it was casting an eye on the church and how they failed, you know, victims, you know, who said, hey, you know, I'm going through this, and he's doing that, and or she's doing that. And lo and behold, they were no help. But these days and times, things are different. And if you want to get out, you can get out. There are a lot more resources. Like I said, you know, can you just walk out? And it's going to be just easy. You know, no you know, no worries at all. No. Because also, you know, people are, you know, they have more access, you know. But this is why, you know, we encourage you to seek God, because, you know, it just gives you a different head. This gives you it should give you a different head, a different mind, a different way of thinking. You know, so, you know, please, you know, to hear this father say, you know, I told her to leave him alone, but it seemed like the more I say it, the more she saw him. Can you imagine how he must feel now to know that he was correct? If this is the person that actually killed her by beheading her, can you imagine how this man must feel? Oh, my goodness gracious. Alrighty. What else are we talking about? Well, this had to have been on the news. I'm sure this was newsworthy. So for those of you who listen to the news, this may not be news to you, but there's a California woman who's been charged with 6 counts of murder after she crashed her car while doing 130 miles per hour. Now, when I even read that, that took my breath away, because I know sometimes while I'm driving or riding in a car, I tend to sit behind the passenger seat because, you know, in the back row on the passenger side, so I can see the speedometer, because sometimes when people are driving, it feels like they're driving quicker, you know, faster than they really are. And they say that they initially thought that this 37-year-old Nicole Linton was driving 90 miles per hour before she crashed into multiple cars. But when they checked further, it revealed that her speed was actually 130, and that she floored the gas pedal for at least 5 seconds leading into the crash, going from 122 to 130 miles per hour. So they say that she killed 6 people in this crash, including a fetus inside a woman who was weeks from delivery. And they say, in addition to the 6 counts of murder, they're charging her with 5 counts of vehicular manslaughter and gross negligence. But here's what we're talking about this story this morning. They say that in the court filings, her lawyer said that she has no recollection of the events that led to her collision. And they say that all she said was she knew that she was lying on the pavement and she was seeing her car on fire. And she had this apparent lapse of consciousness. They say in further filing, they say she's been experiencing mental health crisis long before this crash. And in 2018, she had a mental health breakdown while she was in nursing school at the University of Texas in Houston. And the stress was too much for her, and it broke her sister said. And that was the beginning of the journey of her 4-year struggle with mental illness. Now, they say that, you know, she told them that she had been stressed out due to a demanding job as a nurse, and she had not slept in days prior to the crash. Another time, she told her family that she believed that her dead grandmother had possessed her. So she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at a psychiatric hospital. And this, again, was her background leading to this crash. Now, they say that, you know, she's in jail. She has not been allowed to get bail. And they're going to further check her mental status for, you know, for court purposes. So I guess they're saying that they're going to check her mental status to see if she is able to be fit for trial. Now, all these other mental illness issues we've been talking about for the past, 8 months or so, you know, where all this mental issue stuff is coming to the surface and is the reason why these people are doing what they did. You know, you're talking 130 miles an hour. And it doesn't say that she was on a highway. I'm studying this article, and it does not say she was on a highway. So what stretch of street were you on that you were driving at 122 and floored your car for 5 seconds where it ended up getting to 130 miles per hour? So no wonder the car she hit, she ended up killing people. You realize the impact of a car going 130 miles per hour? Well, here's what always happens. How she don't end up dead? So you, in your recklessness, you end up driving 130 miles per hour and you kill 6 people, but all you got is a lapse of memory? Are you serious? That's all you have is a lapse of memory. They say she got a broken arm. Her leg was broken. She had a scar on her chin. Nothing. 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 So, you know, this here, a new form of mental illness. New form of mental illness. And her grandmother, she told her family that her grandmother had possessed her. Oh, Lord. Too bad nobody was able to do anything about her. Too bad nobody was able to do anything about her prior to this. You know, I'm not surprised, you know, when they say that, you know, she experienced her first mental breakdown when she was in nursing school, because that's quite common, whether you realize it or not. When, you know, when people are going to school, you know, they get stressed out because a lot of times it's too much. It's too much. It's way more, you know, you're trying to reach for something that you're not really ready for. But because you've got these aspirations and because this is what you want to do, you apply all this pressure on yourself. This is, I'm telling you, this is very, very common. They say they notice a lot of students do go through this mental breakdown, especially students who are going into the medical field. Yes, this is not the first time I've heard this. This is quite common. I haven't heard it in a minute. Haven't heard it in a minute, but this is quite common, you know, where they end up taking pills and they end up drinking, and later on it really comes to a head. So now you have her with this mental breakdown in nursing school. Somehow or another, she passes whatever tests and, you know, she needs to do. to become a nurse. She becomes a nurse, and this is what happens. She said, I had a stressful day, and I haven't been able to sleep in days. Wow. So now six people are gone because you pushed yourself to the limit. Oh, boy, I tell you. All right. We got one more story, and I wanted to definitely talk about this one because Vivian brought us this this story on her Socially Conscious segment a week or so ago. So they have a 13-year-old California middle school boy who's been arrested after bringing fentanyl to school that caused a school supervisor to suffer an overdose. Now, initially when I read the caption, I'm thinking it was a kid who overdosed, but no, they say it's a school supervisor. And I'm like, well, did he use the fentanyl? Did he sneak the fentanyl? How in the world did it end up with a school supervisor overdosing? Well, they say that this kid had 150 fentanyl pills in a bag disguised as Percocet. And they say they got the pills. The pills were discovered when they conducted a search of the student in a completely unrelated case. He had an altercation with another student, and somehow another it led to them searching him. Well, here's what happened. They say that the school supervisor who opened up the pills overdosed. Yeah. They say he ingested the pills when it was in a pill bottle. He just opened up the pill bottle to check it and was exposed due to them being an inhalation hazard. Yes. So that's how he was able to ingest when he opened. Can you imagine just opening up a pill bottle and you overdose? Now, before we had the story of, you know, the woman touching the napkin and then the husband touching her. This stuff here is some potent stuff. And they had to take him to the local hospital for treatment. And they say that this kid had the fentanyl pills disguised as Percocet, so it must have been in a bottle that read Percocet. And they said it had about $300 on him. They don't know if he gave away or sold any of the pills to any of the other students. Well, it would be safe to say that they would be dead. If this man opened up the bottle and he suffered an overdose, what would happen if a kid got hold to this? Okay? Man, oh man, oh man. So they say that they're charging this 13-year-old student with possession of a controlled substance of sales and was taken to a juvenile hall subsequently. So he's going to face charges. Going to face charges. Oh, it's time to talk to the crew. Time to talk to the crew. Let's see what the crew has to say this morning. Let's say good morning to our Pastor Charlene. Good morning, Pastor Charlene.
Good morning, Pastor Steph. How are you today, my dear?
I am well, thank you. I am well. Got off to a real awkward start, but, you know, hopefully I found my rhythm. Thank you very much. How you doing over there?
I'm doing good today, I thank the Lord.
Okay. Oh, goodness. Well, Pastor Charlene, we have our stories this morning. Now, you know, I wanted to definitely bring the first story because, you know, we're always talking about the kids and, you know, what they do wrong. And here we have a group of boys who got together when they felt that the teacher was acting a little creepy and the little girls were uncomfortable. And now they have this what they call this pedo, let me get the proper word for it, because I thought it was interesting, this pedo database, where they were logging every time he said or did something in the classroom that made the little girls nervous and uncomfortable. And they tried to take this initially to the teachers or the powers that be, but nobody paid them any attention. So here we are, you know, with some kids doing some good stuff, and you don't pay them any attention. Well, thank God that eventually he was, you know, without anything getting any going any further, that they did, you know, arrest him, and he's out on leave, and they're investigating this. But, you know, thank God for these kids, right?
Yes. Yes, that they stuck up with each other and was able to write everything down and be able to have stuff. And, you know, because a lot of times they say when, what time this happened, you know,
right.
And they wrote it down. So that was a good thing. You know, the bad part is a lot of times people don't listen to the children. But if you have a
right.
group of people, you got to know who you're talking to as well. You know, it's just like, you know, what they do with the parents, because, you know, the first person you usually go to is your parent, you know. So that was
right.
a good thing that they went higher.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And again, you know, we're always talking about the bad things that the kids do. So, you know, thank God that they were proactive. Thank God they
yes.
were proactive. All right, Pastor Shauna, we're talking about this woman who was beheaded by the possibly by the very man who the father said, leave him alone. Don't even talk to him. I don't care if you got kids with him. Leave him alone. She goes and she subsequently gets a court order of protection against him, but she still sees him. And now she's found, her body is found without a head, having been cut off with a sword. And this guy, you know, that they're looking at, the daughter's father, had schizophrenia diagnosis, you know. And, you know, get out, Pastor Charlene, get out. What are we saying this morning?
Absolutely. Get out. Look for these red flags for us to be able to stay alive. We must listen. We have to step back and see the history of these people that we date. We have to see who we having these babies with. Don't think that you're going to change the person. A lot of times, that's what a lot of people do. I'm so sorry. I can't even imagine how the father is feeling, because you told her, you know, to leave him. And then when stuff comes up, you know, upon someone, even death, you know, or just them getting beat really bad, you know, ladies, listen. Men too, because women abuse as well. Look for them flags. You know what I mean? Back up. Other people can see what you're not seeing, because when you're in the mix and you all in love and they telling you what you want to hear, step back. Step back. You know, I've been in that before. Thank the Lord that he didn't kill me. He tried to kill me 3 times, but I'm still standing because I had to learn how to look past that, all that love stuff, and see what a person really is. And then when you know their history, like you said, that he had issues anyway, come on, ladies and gentlemen, look at that history, see those red flags, and move, because that paper really doesn't mean anything to them.
Nope, not at all. And it didn't mean nothing to her either, unfortunately, when she went to get it, but she continued to see him even after. So, you know, you can't, you know, go and go through all this process and you yourself, you're not honoring, you know, what it is the paper is saying. So please, please, please get out, get out, get out. All right, Pastor Charlotte, you can either take the woman who killed the people running, you know, running her car at 130 miles per hour, or this fentanyl issue with the fentanyl being so strong that the 13-year-old had, that the school supervisor overdosed.
I want to talk about the lady that put her foot down on 130 and killed these people, and she's still alive. How does that happen? That was my first thing, like, she killed all these people, but you get to walk away? How does that happen? And then if you have true, people have breakdowns, I understand that. But if you get to a place of it becomes a mental, they need to come up with, when they go to the doctor and the doctor just says that they have these issues, some kind of way you need to not to, for them to be able to say you cannot drive. It needs to be a red flag because too many people are getting behind the wheel and in the mix of their depression, and then they take it out on others. It got to be able to come up with some kind of way of the people not driving. Now, granted, people get behind the wheel that don't have license. I know that too. So I know somebody's thinking that as well. But we got to get to a place that if we can try to stop something, how they say, if you see something, say something. So try to do that. Because she killed 6 people. She should never come out of jail. Never. Because I know there was just 6, but she could have killed so many more. So many, so many more. And then when you were saying that she was, my thought was she was she on the highway? And once you said that it doesn't say that, can you imagine children coming out of school? You know, we don't know what time it was. People going to work. It could have been really more than what that was. My heart goes out for the 6 and their families, but she doesn't need to come out anymore.
Absolutely. Really, this could have been a worse tragedy, but mm-hmm. Thank God that it wasn't. Thank God it wasn't. Thank you for joining us this morning, Pastor Charlene. Let's say good morning to our Pastor KL. Good morning, Pastor KL.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you, Pastor Steph and Pastor Charlene?
Well, thank you. Well, thank you. Well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Good, good, good. All right, this morning we're talking about, let's stick with the woman who didn't listen to her father. Her child's father had been violent with her previously, and father said, you know, don't even talk to him. And she went and got an order of protection. Later to be found, her body was found, and then when they found the head, they were able to couple that with the body, and they're now looking at him for this murder. And they said that, you know, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, but he, in addition, drank excessively. And, you know, we've talked about this before here on this due time. Get out, get out, get out. What are we talking about here, Pastor KL?
Yeah, it's really sad because, you know, even a lot of times in our parenting, in our younger ages, you know, when we tell our children don't do something or don't be with somebody, they do the total opposite because mommy and daddy said don't do it. And we don't know what we're talking about. And sometimes they have to learn from there. But at this point, there was no learning lesson. You couldn't come back from this. You know, you died. You know, and it's sad that we don't use the wisdom of the elders who can see out, you know, while you're in, you know, to give you advice to get out of this thing. You know, sometimes we just think, oh, they're hating on us. They're hating on our relationship. And then you have those folks also who go through things. You call the police, but then you never show up to court. So it's really, really crazy. You know they're no good for you. You know all the stuff that they've done to you, you know, but yet, for some reason, they're like a drug. You know, you just can't seem to get away from them.
Yeah, you know, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying. It is definitely something that is common. It's more common than we would like to even think, you know. And like you said, you know, there have been times when, you know, the person, you know, I was looking at a show a week or so ago, and that's what happened on the show. You know, this guy really beat her really bad, and she's running behind the cops, you know, and the detectives later asking, you know, can you not arrest him? I mean, can you let him go? Can he not be charged? And he was explaining to her, ma'am, this has got nothing to do with you. You know, we need you to show up to court. That's all you need to do. And sure enough,
right,
when the time to go to court, where was she? She wasn't there. You know, and like
yeah.
you said,
yeah.
you know, that's one of the things I thought about. You know, it's always sad when there's no lesson learned, if you will. You know, like you said, there's no coming back. There's no way to come back and say, you know, I learned. I should have listened. You know, now you have these children who don't have a mother. And they don't have
right.
a father either if, you know, if he's found guilty. But do they really have a father even in his schizophrenic state? Because who are they going to allow? Ain't nobody going to allow him to see them kids. So now they don't have
mm-hmm.
a parent. You know what I'm saying? So
and compile that,
you know,
and compile that with alcohol is even worse.
Right, right. And that's what her grandmother said. That's what it says. Her grandmother said, you know, when I was given the story, you know, that's exactly what the grandmother said. The grandmother said he likes to use that as an excuse, but he drinks all the time. So you
right.
already know that you're schizophrenic. You already know that you're taking these meds, and now you compound that with alcohol? Oh, no. Oh, no. A definite recipe for disaster. And that's what it looks like has happened here. So, you know, it's really very sad that there's no lesson. There's no comeback from this. Really very sad. All right, Pastor Kale, we're talking about, let's stick with the story of the young lady, if we could call her that, this nurse who had this breakdown, had this mental breakdown when she was going to nursing school. And, you know, she had another breakdown as a nurse. They say one day she went to work. She left work. She had been stressed. This is what she's telling them, that she was stressed when she left work. She hadn't been to sleep in days. And she had a breakdown behind the wheel of a car and ended up flooring the gas pedal, that the car reached 130 miles per hour, killing 6 people. You know, I was saying that years ago you used to hear this, like, from about these medical students, you know, having breakdowns and then taking pills and drinking and things like that, because this level of studying was really too much, really too much.
Right.
And now you're trying to, you know, obtain this field of study, this career, but mentally it's too much. Do you remember when that was kind of a common conversation?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think for my question, I would ask, was a suicide. Did she get so depressed and break down so hard that she was contemplating suicide? I just can't see anyone driving at that speed, you know, whether on the highway, whether in the street, especially on the street. You know, did you just lose it that bad that you just thought it wasn't worth it anymore? You know, I would really love to go beyond and see what the frame of mind was, because I can't see even in your frustration or, you know, even in your tiredness, why would you just floor your car? To do what? To go where? On a rush to nowhere.
Yeah. It just, all it says is she claims that she had a breakdown behind the wheel. This is not her first time having a breakdown. She had a breakdown when she was going to nursing school. There are other times where she's told family that she, her grandmother possessed her. She was possessed by a grandmother. And here we are. Here we are, you know, where six people are dead. How many families are affected because, you know, this is what happened? And I have to tell you, that's some consideration, what you said, because I never even considered that maybe she was actually out to take her own life.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
That does make a lot of sense, Pastor K.L. Well, hopefully, you know, they won't ever allow her out. She is not out on bail, but they don't say that they're giving her any psychiatric treatment or they've placed her in that, you know, in that type of facility. Well, looking at what these lawyers are pushing for, you know, it looks like that's what they're going to try to do is put her in some kind of psychiatric facility and handle it from there.
I mean, it sounds like a mental issue. Listen, I mean, if you go deep in it, it sounds like a suicide going bad. Because she didn't get a scratch.
Nope. It's just like the drunk drivers. They end up killing people and they walk away unscathed. And look at six people and you have nothing. Nothing physically to show for this year. Wow. Whew. Well, thank you so much, Pastor KL, for joining us this morning. Let's talk to our brother Al. Let's see if he's available. Good morning, brother Al.
Good morning. I was trying to get to the doggone mute button.
Okay. Good morning. Brother Al. We've got two conversations to talk about this morning. Glad to have you on with us.
Thank you much. Glad to be here.
Yes. Now, I'm going to give you the story, since you love the kids. I want to give you the story of the Rhode Island boys who watched this teacher behave in a very unprofessional manner, who constantly targeted the little girls, you know, telling one to get up and dance for him. He played some music and asked her to get up and dance. This is all during class. You know, everybody should come in a bathing suit. He even had one little girl, Brother Al, take off her shoes and wiggle her toes. And the four boys, but the little boys had something that they called a pedo database, where they were logging each time he was talking to some of these little girls and what he would do or say and how the little girls would respond. And they said that they noticed that the little girls were uncomfortable, that even if they giggled, you could tell it was an awkward giggle. It was not where they were really laughing. And, you know, we're always talking about the wrong these children do, but here we are. We've got these little boys who really stepped up to the plate, and they told the authorities, but nobody paid attention. Now, can you imagine, Brother Al, had in between this time of them telling somebody, something jumped off, and he actually did get, you know, to these kids? So, you know, what do you want to talk about this morning regarding this here and these little boys?
Oh, man, I applaud them young boys for seeing what was going on and stepping up to say something. You know, sometimes these little kids, they get afraid to say something because they think they're the one doing something wrong, or they're going to get in trouble, or sometimes they feel they don't want to get someone in trouble. So I applaud those young men for stepping up. And you know how I feel about it. They need to dig up the jail and put them under there and put the jail back down, you know, for you, you know, attacking our kids. And these are the things that, you know, upset me with the school system. You know, you got some people out here, including myself when I first was trying to get in the board there, who love what they do, who love the kids, who got good intentions, and they put us through absolute hell trying to get in. And then you got these pedophiles and these people who are doing the thing to the kids, they get in with no problem. So it's like the system is just so backwards, you know. But I applaud them young men for, you know, stepping up. And they definitely have to get some psychiatry help for them, for, you know, for those young kids that need to get into.
You still there, Brother Al? Or did we lose you?
I finished the statement.
Oh, okay. All right. We have the woman who had the mental breakdown. And at 113 miles an hour, murdered six people with her car. I was asking Pastor KL, do you remember a time when there was a constant chatter about, you know, mainly medical students, but the people who were, you know, going to in these long years of studies, and they were having this breakdown, and they were taking pills, and they were drinking, and they just weren't successful, you know, at achieving, you know, this as easy as they thought that they would have. And do you remember that?
Yes. Is it, I'm sorry because I got a little distracted. So you're talking about the lady who ran through the light with her car, right?
Right. It says that she floored her car to 130 miles per hour, but they're saying that initially she started off, her first breakdown was in medical school when she was going to school to be a nurse, and she had a breakdown from then. And they said that, you know, over the years, you know, she had said that the grandmother had possessed her and things like that. And I was asking you, do you remember back in the day where they would talk about this quite often, about the medical students who were, because it just got to them, and they ended up with that mental breakdown. Do you remember that?
Yeah. You know, and, you know, sometimes in a field, when they need people, they overlook things. You know, I'm starting to see that now that, you know, we're going through the situation with teachers. You know, they starting to act as teachers, you know, even if you ain't got certain credits. But they want teachers so bad that they're overlooking that. You know, even in the police department before, you couldn't have a felony or something. They starting to overlook that. So they don't realize what they're doing when they starting to overlook these things, because they're in desperate need of getting people, you know, for these positions.
Wow.
And you know, and as far as this lady, you know, I don't know if people saw the video. I actually went online and saw the video, and it just broke my heart to see her just go through that. I mean, you got to see it. I mean, if you blink, you'll miss it. That's how fast she was gone. And, you know, it was one family that the car that she hit. You know, it was a young, beautiful couple trying to get their life together. I think one kid was, the young man was 25, his girlfriend was 23. They had an 11-month-old baby in the car, and she was pregnant. They was on their way to a doctor's appointment. So that just crushed my heart, you know. And I always say, you know, what happened with it is that she alive. I always say when people be alive from doing things like that, you know, that's their punishment from God, because you got to live with that for the rest of your life. You got to live with that.
Yeah.
Because if you see her car, If you see her car, it's no way that woman should have survived that. I see in her car, it's no way she should have survived that. But I always said that's her punishment from God. She got to live with that for the rest of her life.
Oh, yeah. That's something that she has to face. And again, I've said that. I agree with you, brother. I've said many a time, physical death is sometimes a favor. Because to be dead and not know anything versus to be alive, like you said, and, you know, you got to live with this and know that this is, you know, what happened. You know, and then if she's mentally ill, who knows what she'll really have to contend with mentally. You know what I'm saying? So this is a very, very, very tragic situation for her family, as well as all the murdered victims' families. So, you know, it's a lot in this world, you know, and in one incident, you know, all of this took place. So, you know, we definitely have to keep those families lifted in prayer. Thank you for joining us, Brother Al. Well, my due time crew, you know, I was looking up some stuff, and I came across this list, and they are saying men with these particular traits are more likely to be emotionally unavailable. That's what we're going to talk about today in our relationship conversation. And we have two men on the line, and we have, you know, Pastor Charlene. You know, so we're going to see, you know, what's the thought process behind, you know, some of this statement that men with these particular traits tend to be emotionally unavailable. They say when he's insecure, he tends to be emotionally unavailable. Pastor Charlene, what's your thought? Would you agree?
I'll say yes. Yes, because if he's unemotionally, then he's not thinking as to be in a relationship. So he's thinking more of his feelings than putting her part of in the equation of the relationship.
Okay. So Pastor Charlene says, thumbs up, yes. He is definitely more likely to be emotionally unavailable. Pastor KL, you know, if a man is insecure, is he more likely to be emotionally unavailable?
Oh, definitely. If I'm insecure, first of all, I don't know how to speak to you. I don't know how to share my emotions. I don't know how to come out to you, you know. So I'm gonna be stuck within myself, you know, because I'm afraid of what you might think of me. I've already put a stamp on how I feel about me, and how I feel that anybody else sees me. So yeah, I'm definitely emotionally unavailable.
All righty. Number two, that's the second thumbs up. Brother Al, a man who's insecure, would you say he is more likely to be emotionally unavailable?
Well, make that three thumbs up, absolutely. You know, if you're insecure, that means you have no confidence. You have no confidence. And how can you be in a relationship and help out your partner when you insecure? You don't have no confidence in yourself. So how can you help, you know, build somebody else? So I'll say definitely yes.
All righty. Pastor KL, this thing when a man is incapable of honest communication, that he is more likely to be emotionally unavailable. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. Everything I say is a lie. And I've gotten to a point of making me believe what I'm saying. So, yeah, I'm not going to get wrapped up emotionally because everything is I created a character. You know, when you create a character, you can't get involved because the stuff will end up coming out that you don't want to come out. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
All righty. Brother Al, he's incapable of honest communication. Does that make him emotionally unavailable, more likely?
Well, basically, you said it the nice way. I'm going to put it the other way. If he is a liar, is he incapable of doing it? So yes, because, again, I know somebody like that, and it's so crazy because, he's incapable because he lies so much that he starts to believe his own lies. You know, I know somebody like that, and it's crazy. He don't know whether he's coming or going because he done told this, and he's trying to remember what lie he told and this, and that. So, yes, most definitely.
All righty. Pastor Charlene, if you're incapable of honest communication, as Brother Al said, you're a liar. You know, are you more likely to be more likely to be unavailable emotionally?
Yes, and that's what I was going to say. He's a liar because in most of the time he lies so much he done forgot his own lie and believed the lie that he gave. So, yes, he is not emotional because he don't even know. He just lied and he made up who he is. You don't even know who he is.
All right. He's a liar. All right. If you're narcissistic, Brother Al, if the man is narcissistic, you know, is he most likely to be emotionally unavailable?
Okay, I didn't hear that part. You said if he's not persistent?
If he's narcissistic,
definitely, because you think it's just all about him, you know, nobody else. So it's all about him. So if you believe it's all about you, then you should just be by yourself. Don't involve nobody else in your craziness. So, yes.
All right. Pastor Charlene, you know, you're a narcissist. And, you know, they're saying that when you're like that, you're definitely emotionally unavailable. Would you agree?
That's all about him, correct?
Yep. It's all about him.
Okay. Want to make sure that, okay. All about him, absolutely, because you don't really, you just there. But it's him. It's all about him. It's his way. It's no other way but what he say. So, yes.
All right. Pastor KL, what are we saying here?
We're saying nobody else matters. Your opinion doesn't matter. Your thought doesn't matter. You don't mind. You don't matter. You know, it's like mind over matter. I don't mind because you don't matter. You know, so yeah, I'm not even connected to you at all. You know, we're just here, and as long as you're playing my role that I want you to play, because remember I wrote the script. So as long as you follow the role and don't go off script, we okay.
All righty. Pastor Charlene, a workaholic. He's a workaholic. Now, most family men say, you know, they work constantly so that they can make it happen, you know, for the family, that they keep food on the table. Yes, and I got bills to pay, you know, so they have an excuse, if you will, for being a workaholic. And does that make them emotionally unavailable?
Yes, because you need to spend time with your family. And what are you not coming home for? Because that always question me of if you work so much, and I get it, you know, that, you know, you want to be able to pay your bills, but you have to make time, because if you don't make time, then somebody else might make time. And then therefore, yeah, you just don't want to come home. Sometimes it's that too. You know, I just don't want to be home. So he's not attached to you.
Okay, okay. Pastor KL, you know, that workaholic, for whatever the reason is, he's a workaholic. You know, whether he's, you know, he grew up in a home where, you know, all he did was see his father work, and that's what he knows to do. If he's, you know, worrying about or concerned about making sure that the bills are paid and food is on the table, whatever the reason is that he's a workaholic, whether, you know, he's trying to stay out the house, like Pastor Charlotte said, you know, is he emotionally unavailable? And if so, why?
Well, on this one, I'll have to disagree, because I am that workaholic. I am the one who works, and I'm still emotionally attached to knowing the needs of my family, the needs of my wife, the needs of the children. I believe you can be a workaholic and still be emotionally attached. You know, I mean, I think it's a rare thing, because most people who are workaholics, they're working to fill a void. You know, but there's some of us who just have to work. You know, I can't see myself, even when I'm able to retire, because I just fall out and phase out.
All righty. Well, thank you for that openness. All right, Brother Al, which side of the fence do you fall on? You know, that workaholic, you know, is he emotionally unavailable?
You know, I think it can cause an issue. I mean, I do agree with Pastor Kel, because you're working, because you may have to, you know, it may be a situation where, look, I have to do this to keep my head above float. You know, my other half left me. I'm with the kids. I got to make sure. So I think that you can still be emotional attached, but I do believe that it can cause an issue. Now, one of the things I can say, you can still be emotionally attached, but the person you with might not be emotionally attached, because it's like, okay, I get time when he get time. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I want to go out today, or I can't go out today because he got to work. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I just want to sit and cuddle and watch TV, or I can't do that because he's doing 12 hours a day. Still could be emotionally attached, but your other half may not be because of what you're going on. So I do believe that, you know, you can still be emotionally attached, but it can cause an issue.
Okay. Ah, interesting one. Emotionally immature. If you're emotionally immature, is it most likely that you are emotionally unavailable, Pastor KL?
Oh, definitely. If you can't communicate, if you can't, what's the word I'm looking for, negotiate, you know, if you can't see person half, you know, on the other side, somebody else is abused and stuff, and you're just shot, you don't know how to express yourself, it could be a problem. It could be a major problem.
Okay. Brother Al, we're talking about emotionally immature. You know, how does this work its way into you possibly being emotionally unavailable?
Especially for me, I'm saying it could turn your partner off. You know, because you immature emotionally, which means it has to be your way. So if it don't be your way, what do? You throw a tantrum, you poke out your lip, you stomp off. You know, you immature on how to handle that. So that's definitely going to be a big issue, especially for me. Don't be pouting off. What's wrong with you? Get that lip in before I knock it in.
You know,
my mama used to say. I'm just saying that's what my mama used to say.
Oh, goodness gracious. Pastor Charlotte, have you ever dealt with someone who was emotionally unavailable?
Yes. Where that it was, they thought that their way was right. They act like a little kid when they couldn't get their way. They also didn't, when I say let's bring it to the table, they did everything that was said, you know, the lying, and then you find out that that's not really how they live. That's not really what they have. So it was very emotional, and where you need to get it together, or grandma say, either get on the pot and I'm going to say pee or get off. So, yes.
All right now, Pastor Sean. Sink or swim, Pastor Sean. Sink or swim. I'll help you out. I'll help you out there, Pastor. Sink or swim. You know, sink or swim. All right. Pastor KL. You know, have you ever dealt with anyone who was emotionally unavailable, and what was that like?
No, I really haven't dealt with anybody that's emotionally unavailable. You know, I've always been the catcher. You know, everybody always wanted to. You know, I was a good catch. So I'm just saying, you know, when you try it all you can try, and you finally caught me, you know, emotionally, you did what you needed to do. So I really never had that opportunity. I'm just saying, I'm trying to be honest.
Yeah, hot mess.
I can't. He is so emotionally unavailable right now, Pastor Charlie.
But you know what? Can I say something? On a serious note, I would think, and not that I've experienced this, but I would think that, you know, when people go through like domestic violence and stuff like that, is because, you know, whoever's doing the abusing is emotionally, you know, unavailable. You know, they have tantrums, or they go through this, and they're insecure. You know, all these things that we kind of name, you know, that to me stems to the abuser, to you know, someone who's an abuser, and these are the reasons why. You know, insecurity, man, for a man to be insecure, that plays a big part in their whole character. You know, when they feel that they're not adequate or they don't add up, you know, a lot of things, you know, that kind of kills their pride, you know what I mean, on their manhood, if you would. So a lot of these things that we're talking about, you know, I can't speak for the woman, but for a man, that can cause detriment to a man.
Wow. Well, it's interesting that you made the comparison into, you know, the abuser, because like you said, one of the things that, you know, women have talked about when they describe the man, they talk about the fact that, you know, he was insecure, and now you've got to control in order to build that, you know, feeling of being secure about who you are.
Right.
You know, and again, there's that that liar, like you said, who, you know, now he's a chameleon. You know, he's this way one minute, and then he loves you one minute, then he's beating on you the next minute, and, you know, he loves you for a half hour, and he's beating on you for the next 25 minutes. So it actually does describe an abuser, because these things are the things that, you know, when it's broken down, his characteristics are broken down, these are the things that show up. These traits actually do show up. So good point. Actually, very good point. Brother Al, you know, Have you ever dealt with someone who was emotionally unavailable? And if so, what was that like?
Yes, I have. And it was rough. You know, it was a young lady that I dated. And what happened was she was dating another guy before me. And she was just in love with this guy. And he was doing all type of, he didn't abuse her, but he, I guess you could say mentally, because all he did was cheat on her. And everybody used to tell her, and she didn't want to believe it. Even the dude's mother told her, listen, you're a really good person. My son is a dog. I'm telling you now, he got this female, that female. And she didn't want to hear it. So what made her came to grips with it was that he met some crazy chick he was dealing with, and the girl came and knocked on her door and was like, listen, this is my man. I'm pregnant by him. And she had a child by him. So anyway, that, you know, she left from there. But when I met her and we started dating, to her, she felt showing any type of emotion was a sign of showing weakness. So wow. I would be with her. I don't know if she happy, sad, you know, and I'm just looking at her and she couldn't even tell me she liked me. You know, so I tried to deal with it for a while, so I just couldn't deal with it no more. And I just was like, listen, you really need to heal yourself before you move on to somebody else. But it was rough because, like I say, you know, and then sometimes we'd be having a good time, then she would start something on purpose to push me away because she felt that, man, we get close, he might do something to me. So she was just emotionally torn up. And it wasn't a good feeling because she was a good person. But I got to the point where I was like, listen, I can't take this no more. I got to go. Then she get mad at me for leaving. But I'm like, what do you want me to do? You can't even tell me you like me. I ain't even asking you, do you love me? I asked you, do you like me? And you can't even say it. So I was like, you need to get some help and then look to date after you get some help. But she was emotionally wrecked behind that. And again, showing emotion to her was showing a sign of a weakness.
Good point.
Love you, Brother Al. I love you, Brother Al, and I want to give you a hug. I love you.
I love you too.
Make up all them hugs you didn't get during that period of your life.
Right.
Thank you so much.
I need y'all all to line up and give me a hug. All y'all line up, give me a hug.
Yes,
listeners too, I need everybody lined up.
Yes, we online right now. We got you, Brother Al. We got you. Thank you so much for your contribution into today's conversation. And we pray you have a blessed day.
Yeah, well,
you too.
I'll hug you if you got
Thank
a burger
you.
For me. I love you, though.
Yeah.
I got a cheeseburger for you. I got one.
All right. Thank you. All righty. Oh, it's Monday morning. It's the top of the hour, and there's only one place we have to be, and that's be in position to get that switch tip with Shanti. Good morning, Shanti.
Good morning, Pastor Steph. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Good. What you got for us? What you got for us?
Today we got the switch with Shantice, where we make the switch from the streets to our godly seat. And our switch tip 117 is stop clouding your discernment. Now, when you think about discernment, or if you Google it, the initial definition that comes up is the ability to judge well. But that is the worldly definition, the street definition. Because when you read the second one, which is the perception, which meaning the way we see and hear in the absence of judgment with a view of obtaining spiritual guidance and understanding. So it has nothing to do with judging, and that's a word that I wish I could write down, tear up, burn up, and never hear it again sometimes. But discernment has everything to do with how we see and how we hear outside of judging, with the intention of being able to grab a hold of spiritual guidance and understanding. And that's really deep if you really think about that definition. When reading the definition, it kind of reminded me of common sense, but again, common sense is like grace. You can't act for it. You either get it or you don't. But you really have to make sure that, especially when you're building and or continuing, if you're just starting God or continuing your relationship with God, one of the things that he blesses you with through the Holy Spirit is discernment, is a better way to see. He gives you a brand new set of eyes. He gives you a brand new set of ears. So now you can understand things beyond the streets, beyond the world. And now the things that used to look logical no longer look logical, so on and so forth. So the main question that came to mind when thinking about discernment is, what or who are we allowing to cloud the way we see and the way we hear? Who or what are we allowing to cloud the way we see and the way we hear, which is now blocking us being able to grab a hold of the spiritual guidance and the spiritual understanding that we need? And I had a very deep conversation with someone yesterday, and throughout the course, I believe, of the past month, discernment has really been a word, even if it wasn't used directly, that has been coming up for me in conversations, because what God helped me to realize is we all have a bunch of things that, you know, we put before God, we put before what we ultimately want. When you're thinking about the right now feel good, one of the things that he really revealed to me is I allowed relationships to cloud my discernment. It was always about Shantice and Nick, Shantice and Luther, Shantice and, it always had to be an and with another man's name on the end. That was what I used to determine my worth, my happiness, and success. And I would be able to, can you get me a little clearer, Pastor Steph?
Yeah, move around a little bit, please. We're losing you. We don't want to lose anything you're saying.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Do I sound a little clearer?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. But it was all about me and relationships, me and a man. And I had nothing to do with the man. Again, it had everything to do with what the relationship represented. And all of the time and advantages and experience and everything that I cheated myself out of, because that just clouded how I saw, that clouded how I was hearing things, and I was never able to really grab a hold of any true level of spiritual guidance and understanding, because my understanding and guidance was within relationships. Okay, so 1 Corinthians 2:14 in the Message version reads, the unspiritual self, just as it is by nature, can't receive the gifts of God's Spirit. There's no capacity for them. They seem like so much silliness. Spirit can be known only by Spirit, God's Spirit, and our spirits in open communion. So when we link ourselves up with either unbelievers or those who were once believers and now, for whatever the reason is, they've turned their back on God, this is what we get. We give them the permission to now interfere with our discernment. We give them the permission to interfere with how we see and how we hear, and to interfere with our spiritual guidance and our spiritual understanding. And really, again, it's not them. This is what you're doing to yourself, but just through these people. Okay, 1 John 4:1 Message version. My dear friends, don't believe everything you hear. Carefully weigh and examine what people tell you. Not everyone who talks about God comes from God. There are a lot of lying preachers loose in this world. And the question that came up in my head after reading this verse was, are you one of those lying preachers? You know, because it's easy to read that and now start thinking about anyone who's ever preached from the pulpit or preached to you in a regular conversation, you know, throughout your day, or if you went to them, you know, for advice and now they're quote-unquote giving you guidance and spiritual counsel and everything. But we can be a lying preacher when we say one thing from God, but then we do the opposite of God. You know, so now we don't want to be the ones that are now responsible for helping to cloud someone else's discernment. You know, now we're interfering with how they hear and how they see, so that they can really grab a hold of the guidance and the understanding that God needs them to have. Okay, Ephesians 4:14b, meaning the second part of the verse in the New Living Translation, we will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever they sound like the truth. And the only way to be able to avoid being influenced by people like that is to stay in prayer, is to have regular one-on-one time with God, is to make sure you're in church with like-minded people so that you can be that blessing to them and they can be that blessing to you the way God has intended. And, you know, you can't just stick with one thing. You know, long go the days where, you know, it really felt okay to only be in church, or I don't go to church, but at least I read my Bible. And no, you need all of these components. Like, things are getting real out here. You need to drench yourself in every level of protection, or you will be like this verse, and it will be very easy for you to be influenced and now to have your discernment clouded. Hebrews 5:14, New Living Translation. Now, this verse speaks on you having spiritual growth. Okay, solid food is for those who are mature, who through training, having the skill to recognize the difference between right and wrong. And we had a switch tip a while ago that was entitled Stick with the Training. Okay, we would not be able to have any level of spiritual understanding and spiritual guidance if we do not stick with the training. The only way to stick with the training is to stay connected to the vine. Who is the vine? Jesus is the vine. If we do not stay connected to Jesus, so this brings to mind, people say, I believe in God, or I love God, but I don't believe in Jesus. There's no training. There's no staying connected to the vine. Because God is, of course, very important. But God, it's almost like he said, okay, forget about me real quick. Focus on my son. And one of the reasons is because we can't get access to God if we don't go through his son. So if we're not willing to stick with the training in Jesus, then how we figure we going to go to God with anything, whether we feel it's good or whether we feel it's bad. But unless we stick with the training, we will never be able to level up and be on the level of maturity that we need to be in order to absorb the solid food. Okay, and we have to make sure that we allow Jesus to bless us with humility, so that we can ask God for help. He is not condescending. There was a verse I gave in one of the switch tips. I do not remember which switch tip. I don't remember where the verse is taken from right now. But there was a verse that we brought up where it spoke about God saying, come to me, and he is not condescending. Okay, this is one person you will always be able to rely on, where you go to him and he will not look at you like you're stupid, unlike men. And yourself. Okay, so Psalm 119:125, Message version. I'm your servant. Help me understand what that means, the inner meaning of your instructions. And I just got finished having to going through something this weekend. And, you know, I was saying how I felt and, oh, this is crazy and this is how I feel about that. And I allowed my discernment to be clouded because, you know, I'm just talking and saying how I felt about certain things and certain situations, and God had to really deal with me, you know. And then I had to then speak to someone else about it, and it wasn't me, because before I realized that the words was coming out of my mouth, pretty much like a confession, and I'm like, oh, okay, God, so you really wanted me to say that. And all I could do was go back to him and say, I keep asking you for my integrity. I keep asking you, you know, especially if I have not intentionally done something that would be pleasing to you, you know, and I really need you to show me what this means to be your servant. You know, when we give our lives to God, I'm like, okay, I have to serve and I have to be a servant to you, but it's only when you stick with God that he really shows you what that means, and he and to continue to show you at the level of spiritual guidance and spiritual understanding. So we have to make sure that we're making the conscious decision of making the switch from allowing anything and anyone, which is ultimately the flesh, and then the enemy, because we got to stop giving the enemy so much credit. He can't do anything we don't grant him access to do. But making sure we're making the switch from allowing our flesh and the enemy, from being all entangled and helping to cloud our discernment, to making sure we're switching to just putting that, stop clouding your discernment, because whether you try to put it on people or things, it comes back down to what you allow. Thank you, Pastor Steph.
Thank you, Shanti. Thank you. We pray you have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now we have we had a few things we talked about today, and you know, it's amazing how God can, how he just reveals things to us, you know, in different ways. And you know, we're talking about discernment right after we talked about the traits and the characteristics of, you know, a person who is emotionally unavailable. And there's a level of discernment that you're going to need in order to really be able to determine whether a person is emotionally unavailable or not. You know, and, you know, a person who's insecure, you know, I've seen so many people feign security. And, you know, this is so overrated. But let me back up a little bit. I didn't give our benediction. Romans 11:33-36. Oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways. For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen. I should give us benediction. You know, going back to what I was saying, you know, so many people feign security. You know, they love to kind of glide around and they look good. They look polished. They look accomplished. They look like they've got it together because they're doing so much. And when you look around, you'll find that they're emotionally unavailable. You know, we talked about, you know, that liar, you know, that person who's incapable of being honest. You know, you have so much to cover because you're so insecure that it now becomes you feigning the truth. You're pretending that this is who you are. You're pretending like this is true. You're pretending that, you know, you are this person who's got it all together, and in actuality, you don't have it together. We're talking about that narcissistic person. It's all about you. Oh, does it take some discernment to see when a person, when it's all about you? Oh, that is big. That is big. You know, when nobody else matters. And I got to tell you, when the veil comes off, it shows that no one else matters but you. The workaholic, oh, that person that's busying themselves all the time. And, you know, we were given a couple of different instances where, you know, you really don't want to go home, or you really don't want to be home, or, you know, you really, you know, want to do this and you want to do that. And, you know, you're not stopping long enough to even become attached to anything. And that's emotionally immature. You know, something has happened in your life that has stopped your growth at a certain part. And no matter how many people you date, no matter how many people you, you know, intermingle with, no matter how great you may be on the job and all of this kind of stuff, you know, you're just, at the end of the day, emotionally immature. And, you know, we have a wonderful, wonderful way of disguising who we really are. And it takes a great deal of discernment to be able to look at something and be able to call it what it is. And, you know, that's not a preferred thing. It's not something that people enjoy, because when you're exposed, you become twisted, and now it's everybody else. And, you know, when we're dating or when we're looking to date, you know, these were, you know, the components in a man, you know, that we were talking about today. That's the way, you know, the article was given. You know, men who have these traits, you know, are emotionally unavailable. You know, well, we probably couldn't step too far before we realized that a lot of this is also in women. You know, so, you know, when you're out here and you're involved, make sure you are watching for these things. You know, ask God for the discernment that you can actually see these things for yourself. And you don't get 9 steps in and then you realize that this person is, you know, emotionally unavailable. You know, discernment is a lot. You need to really be tapped into God in order to have the proper discernment. Really, really tap into God and His Spirit in order to get the understanding that you ultimately need. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew for always coming through big time. And I want to thank you for hanging out with us today. Please do not miss that opportunity to, you know, give your life to God right now or deepen that relationship with God right now, because later is not promised to us. Until tomorrow, where is Let's Talk About It Tuesday, Church Folk Day, and we'll be reviewing episode 8 in Kingdom Business. Yeah, we're going to finish that off. There's some untalked about business we need to take care of. Until then, God spares our life. I love you.